This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. This is Dr. Bob Fetrakis. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. I have Dennis Lambert in the studio here at WCRS, your community radio station. Dennis, you're running for Congress as a Green. What district are you running from?
I'm running in the 6th Congressional District of Ohio. That runs all along the Ohio River from Scioto County all the way up to Mahoning County.
Couple questions then. Is there something that you can do for that district, a way to develop that river in a green way that could help the constituents and be sustainable?
Well, this is one of the things that I've been talking about when I go to public appearances, is that we have a great natural resource in the Ohio River. There's a constant flow there, and we have dams on the Ohio River already, and it would be very easy for us to retrofit hydrokinetic water turbines to those dams, providing consistent employment and a local energy origination for those communities that live along the Ohio River. Well, by building these, we're going to shift from dirty jobs to clean jobs, where we're going to have a lot more people working to maintain these pipelines or these generators along the river. And it's basically shifting from a dirty energy to a clean energy. And as much money as the federal government spends to maintain the river, it only makes sense that we also use that to provide electricity for our communities along the river.
Speaking of dirty and clean energy, is fracking an issue in your district?
Absolutely. In the northern part of the district, they're trying to rebuild, I believe it's Route 30, to create more traffic flow through the northern part of the state so that the out-of-state energy exploiters can take their property and move their equipment about our state freely, meanwhile exploiting the natural resources that we have.
Could you explain to the listeners your position on fracking?
I'm absolutely against it, and I've studied it, and from an engineering standpoint, you know, 10% of wells fail before they begin operating them, and within the first 4 years, 30% of wells fail. And I don't see any way, despite whatever paid for scientists say, there's no way to prevent gas or fracking fluid from escaping from underground. You're essentially just forcing liquids or gases into a void and then expecting them to go in the direction that you want them to go.
So what's the number of your district again?
It's the 6th Ohio District.
And how many counties are in it, primarily along the river there?
18 counties. It's probably the largest Ohio congressional district in the state.
And how far north is it?
All the way just south of Youngstown in Mahoning County.
And it ends up
in eastern Scioto County.
All right. We're talking with Dennis Lambert, Green Party candidate in the 6th Congressional District. How would you summarize the three major themes of your campaign?
Platform is basically three parts. It's environmentalism, veterans, and employment. Employment and environment can be taken care of in one fell swoop, as I said, if we focus more on renewable energy, if we move away from all these dirty energies that are working less and less people. A lot of big people complain, well, if you take away the coal jobs, where are the miners going to go? Well, in reality, 40 years ago, there was over 600,000 coal miners. Today, there's probably less than 4,000 coal miners.
So 4,000 in the state of Ohio or your district?
4,000 in the entire United States.
4,000? Yeah, I know it was automated. I know they're using machines now, but there's just not, and I know they're rubbleizing mountains.
Yes, I've actually flown over the mountaintop removal sites in West Virginia, and somebody who grew up in the hills of West Virginia drinking from the streams and hunting the wildlife there, it hurts my heart to see so much devastation done to the planet, especially in an area that has such a rich and diverse natural wildlife.
As a U.S. congressional representative, what type of policies would you push that would create these new green jobs, this Green New Deal?
Well, part of it, as I said before, would be to institute local energy origination stations. Over 80% of our electricity is lost during transmission. And if we focus on small community energy creation stations, then not only will we provide employment for that community, but we also provide long-term energy production for that community that within 7 years can be entirely free for that community.
Entirely free?
And yeah, I've talked to a lot of mayors, and I've done some research, and in fact, a lot of them have said that, you know, within 7 years, even getting loans to buy the solar panels or wind turbines or whatever they're using to generate electricity for their community, they're able to pay off the loans with the interest in less than 9 years. Most often it's within 7 years.
So you're a big advocate of renewables?
Absolutely. I don't see any alternative. The way it's going now, it's getting harder and harder. It's costing more and more energy to extract less and less energy. All the low-hanging fruit is gone. We have to switch now. There's no other option.
As a U.S. representative, the issue would probably come up with bringing in fracking waste from Pennsylvania and West Virginia into your district. How do you think fracking water, the drilling, 90% of the drillings, everything other than the mud and the water, can come directly into the states? Do you have any thoughts on how the federal government should deal with the federal regulation, interstate fracking waste?
I honestly believe that there needs to be more information about what's in the fracking fluid. Despite what the news, you know, Fox and MSNBC and whoever else is touting the clean energy of gas is saying, you know, most of that fluid is not recovered from those fracking holes. In addition to that, we have people going to hospitals everywhere, all over the country, because fracking fluid is getting into their drinking water or into their soil. Somehow they're ingesting it, and they don't know what is causing this illness. If we don't know what's causing the illness, we can't treat it. It's the same symptom that, you know, a lot of veterans from Vietnam had, where they were exposed to Agent Orange, didn't understand it, and the VA and the government basically ignored it.
Now, why is the issue of veterans such a key part of your campaign?
Well, I myself am a veteran. I served 8 years from 92 to 2000 in the U.S. Army. And despite my 8 years of service, the federal government does not recognize me as a veteran because most of the time I spent in service was with the reserves. I can't help it. You know, I served under Bill Clinton, a peacetime president. He's not somebody who wanted to fight a war that lasted way beyond his terms. And as I see it now, I mean, I've worked with vets since I was about 12 years old, being around vets with PTSD, and I see and I work with vets a lot who can't get the help that they need. And it's all because the VA is denying their benefits on specious reasons. There's no reason for them to deny coverage for many of these vets that they're denying coverage on.
Going back, if you were in Congress, hypothetically, would you have supported the war in Iraq?
Absolutely not.
Now, what's your thinking there?
Well, Afghanistan, I supported the invasion of Afghanistan to the point where we were supposed to get Osama bin Laden. After that, everything else started falling apart, and the invasion of Iraq, I thought, was a farce to begin with. It didn't seem a reasonable response to somebody who attacked us for unprovoked. There was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. There were no chemical weapons. We destroyed most of them. And I served with guys who fought in the first Gulf War who told me, you know, we went into Iraq despite the government telling us not to go into Iraq. We went into Iraq. We didn't find anything. Most of the stuff we saw was bombed out tanks, cars, and destroyed infrastructure. We totally annihilated that nation 10 years before we re-invaded them.
So go through your vets policies for the listeners.
Well, primarily, I think the VA rating system needs to be rewritten. It was written in the 1940s and instituted in 1956 on standards that are just onerous to veterans. As for an example, if you had knee surgery because you were, you know, had problems with your knees, the way the VA rates you is if you can lay on your back and bend your knee fully with no problems, then you have no problems with your legs. However, if you stand up and you can't bend your knees, the VA sees no problem in that because they only check for flexion. What they call flexion is which, you know, how much your joints can move. So that is just a small, small segment of the failure of the VA to take care of our veterans.
Yeah, I've ran into a lot of vets over the years. Some have been clients of mine, and almost all of them complain about this percentage. They'll say, look, I acquired this injury in the military, but I'm only getting paid 33%, 57%. How does that work? And then I find when they get much, much older, over 65 or much closer to death, suddenly the VA will give them a higher percent of disability, right? To me, it seems like either you were that disabled initially, but you know they seem to give this weird progressive disability, but you have to fight them for 20, 30 years.
Yeah, and the VA math is very strange. Only in the VA can 20 plus 20 plus 20 equal 50. The way they do their ratings is that you receive a disability rating, and that, say, you get 30% for PTSD. So you have 30% disability. Now the VA says, well, you have 30% disability, but you have 70% ability. So imagine that you had a knee problem along with that PTSD. So they grant you 20% on your knee. Well, they don't take that 20% from that initial 100. They take that 20% from the 70% that you are able. So 20% of 70 is 14, is it? So, and because it's not a whole number above 5, they round it down. So despite having 20% disability in your knee and 30% disability for PTSD, you don't have 50% disability. You have 40% disability.
Uh-huh. The VA's math. Any other parts of your vet policy you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, in addition to that, the VA is making it harder and harder to vets for vets to file. There was a law passed, I believe it was in 2005, to make it easier for veterans to file claims. Basically, all they had to do was write down their complaints, mail it to the VA, and that was considered a claim. Well, the VA, who has had a backlog now for well over 15 years, the VA backlog actually started in 2000, and it was at 500,000 at that time. And it's only, well, according to the VA, it's down to 325,000, but I know that's not right because there's been a lot of stories coming out now of the VA destroying records. Well, in addition to that, the VA, with their most recent report about the backlog, has said that because of this, we need to make the veterans fill out paperwork. Well, if you go to the VA's website, the paperwork for filing a claim is not available on their website. It's not available anywhere. I've looked. Fortunately, I have connections, and I was able to print up copies of it prior to the VA removing it from the website. But if the VA is going to put all these constraints on the veterans, then they need to make it easier for the veterans to follow these constraints.
Oh, we used to be what we called rationing by inconvenience. You just make it real difficult to get the service, and hence you ration it and save it.
And that seems to be the VA's unofficial policy, is let's wait until the veteran is dead and then we'll decide his case. I personally know of three veterans who've died, close friends of mine, who've died within the past 6 months waiting for the VA to finish their claim. One of them was for 5 years old.
This is WCRS 98.3, 102.1, your community radio. You're listening to Dr. Bob Fitrakis and the Other Side of the News. I have Dennis Lambert in the studio. He's running for Congress in the 6th District that goes essentially from up there in the north around Youngstown all the way down in down under, following the Ohio River. There's got to be different problems throughout that district. What are some of the problems you're seeing? And a lot of that sounds very Appalachian district to me. There's got to be high rates of poverty in some of those areas as well. What's that district like?
It is entirely Appalachian and heavily poverty. Impoverished, rather. I know the statistics from veterans unemployment because that's primarily my job, is helping veterans find work. And I know Gallia County, which is in my district, currently has nearly 12% of veterans unemployed. That's just veterans in that county are unemployed. How they manipulate the numbers on unemployment regardless, but throughout the entire district, it's an average of about 8 or 9% unemployment.
So would you prefer different ways of calculating unemployment? I know right now we don't count discouraged workers, and some people say if we count those workers unemployed, still wanting the work, still seeking work, but not registered with the government anymore because their benefits have run out, and part-time people who want to work full-time, our unemployment rate would probably be doubled. Should we be counting discouraged workers and part-timers as part of the unemployment problem?
It is a problem with unemployment, so absolutely we should be counting those people, because if they're underemployed, then they're not making enough to make ends meet. If they're underemployed, then they're basically unemployed, because they're basically working to provide themselves enough money to get back and forth to work. And I've lived like that. That's no way to live.
Now, is it possible to put probably the actual rate in your area for veterans would probably be 18% unemployment and 24% underemployment. And if there's similar rates among other people, is it possible to put people to work in a new green, Green New Deal economy? Are there actual jobs out there?
Well, part of the Green New Deal economy, as I see it, is rebuilding and replacing a lot of our old infrastructure that's fallen apart. A great deal of our roads in my area especially are just pothole ridden, and now since this past horrible winter, it's you might as well be driving on dirt roads because it's just as bad.
Yeah, a few years back there was a figure 40% of the bridges in America needed to be replaced or substantial work. I look back, if you look back at some of the counties the Hocking Hills area, a lot of those trails were actually done originally during the New Deal.
Yeah.
Is there stuff that needs to be done in the state and forest land? I know the governor has backed off, Governor Kasich, on fracking in those territories after revelations came out that the state regulators were working with the fracking industry to discredit environmentalists. Are there... besides the roads, are there other things we could be doing to improve the economies in these areas?
I live in Lawrence County, Ohio, which about 80% of that county is state or national forest areas. Because of that, we don't have much opportunity for employment outside of looking towards recreation. Since the New Deal, we have Lake Vesuvius out there. My grandfather actually was one of the clerks down there when they were building Lake Vesuvius, which is a massive area, and we have plenty of old abandoned railroad.
So is this a lake, a reservoir that it's built, man-made?
Man-made lake, built on Cannons Creek back in 1940-something or other. And because we have so many abandoned rail lines, I could see not only our county and Lawrence County, but all along the river where they have these abandoned rail tracks, putting in four-wheeler trails or something else to create more tourism to come to our areas.
There's the whole rail to trails movement in Ohio for people that bike and do a variety of other outdoor activity. Why hasn't that caught on?
I think because our Appalachian area is ignored by the state and the federal government. Because we're considered poor, ignorant, we basically can't be employed. So they don't look to investing into our communities. They look more, let's mitigate the food stamp problem. Let's try to move a lot of these people into the bigger cities where there's more work, but it's paying less. But we need to get them out of the area so that, you know, they're not interfering with whatever else we want to go.
I'm talking with Dennis Lambert, Green Party candidate for the 6th Congressional District. How's the public education in your district, K through 12? Is it in good shape?
No. the best thing that we do have is we have the best charter school in the state in Scioto-ville, in Scioto County.
And charter schools are notorious. There was supposed to be a solution to K through 12, but they actually, in general, flunk and fail and underperform even some of the worst public schools. How did you get such a good charter school, and what exactly is it doing to be the best in the state?
I'm not exactly sure, but apparently they have met all the metrics or 90% of the metrics that the state has put out for charter schools. For some reason, I think it's just because the community is passionate about the education opportunities for their community. This is why this charter school succeeded where so many others have failed, because a lot of these other charter schools are just money grabs for interest groups.
Many of those. White Hat Management, we've talked about on this show before, the for-profit management for nonprofit charter schools that claim its contract allows it to own all of the equipment that was bought for the schools. So what would you like to see happen in your district with education?
As far as education, K through 12, we really need to focus more on upgrading technology education, you know, the STEM, science, engineering, technology, mathematics. We need to focus more on those sorts of skills. Not only that, but we should also ask our children what they want to learn. Most children are bored in class because you're teaching them something that has no meaning to them. Unless you can explain how this is going to be fruitful or beneficial to them in the future, most kids will tune out. Even if you are presenting something that's interesting to them, they will tune out. But if we focus on what they want to learn, helping them develop their own educational plans, then I think we could have 10 times the success that we have now. And also part of that is getting the parents involved. A lot of parents aren't really interested in their child's education until their child brings home an F, and then they're going to blame the teacher for that F instead of, you didn't sit down with your child after dinner to work on homework. So whose fault is it? Is it really the teacher's fault because you're not spending time helping your child through their homework, or is it your fault because you're not there with the teacher?
I'm wondering, in districts that poor and that rural, is there a problem attracting young, energetic, well-educated teachers to those regions? We know there's problems with health care providers and the lack of health care facilities in many of the rural areas. Do we have a problem with teachers as well?
I don't think so. A lot of the people I graduated high school with became teachers, and a lot of my friends are teachers, and a lot of the people that I meet who are in teaching now are very energetic.
How much money can those districts pay?
Well, most of the teachers in my district, I think, are around $24,000 to $30,000 a year, starting out.
So, I mean, essentially, what you'd make is the assistant manager at Wendy's in Columbus.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, you have to love teaching to want to teach in Appalachia.
I'm talking with Dennis Lambert, Green Party candidate for Congress. When you were earlier talking about these abandoned railroads, where did the railroads go? What were they there for? Were they related to the coal mining industry? And why can't you have trains down there? And why can't that help the tourism business? It seems like it's one of the most beautiful areas in the state.
It is absolutely beautiful, but the thing is, a lot of those railroads were built in the late 1800s and primarily just to move iron out of the region.
They're essentially freight lines?
Yeah, and I think the last train ran on those lines in the 1990s, and since then they've been tearing up the tracks. So it would be good to have some sort of touristy train, steam engine chugging up a hill so people can get nice pictures of the river or whatever, but it's just not there. They've already sold it off for scrap.
Because some of these towns will have these, you know, historic trains, and you'll see them, but they're not going anywhere. They're just like a little small loop. I'm thinking, you know, if you could take advantage of those trails in some way, whether it was train or, you know, the all-terrain vehicles or mountain biking, it would seem like it would be the logical space that's already been cut out.
Yeah, and a lot of us who hunt or hike or bike or whatever who are out in those woods already see that, you know, this is a perfect trail. We just need to do a little maintenance cleaning of the trees around the ceiling part of the trail. And it's already at least 10 feet wide, so it could be handicap accessible.
So what are other policies you're pushing for your district?
Well, among reforming the VA and providing jobs that will help environmentally, I know this is going to be very controversial, but I believe that $21 an hour minimum wage is absolutely something that we need to look into.
Okay, let's repeat that. You want the minimum wage to be...
$21 an hour.
So, on average, a 2,000 hour yearly workload, that would be $42,000 a year.
That sounds right.
And that would clearly be a livable wage, and you could raise a family on it.
Absolutely. I mean, apparently the Republicans don't want to raise minimum wage because they turned down the vote last week. If we can't get people to employ better than 28 hours a week, then we have to provide them with a living wage. Minimum wage was passed to be a livable wage. It has well passed a point where it is no longer a livable wage. It is now a slave wage. It's a wage to keep people tied to their work, tied to their location, where they can't expand, can't grow, can't have a healthy family.
Quickly, the Affordable Health Care Act.
We should have passed a single payer bill.
Okay, so a single payer. But then that would have been much much more effective and would have cut the insurance company's profits out.
Oh, well, what a shame that some billionaires are going to lose out on some money.
All right. Last minute here, Dennis. Anything else you'd like to say to the listeners of The Other Side of the News?
I just like to let people know that if you vote the Green Party, you're not throwing away your vote. If you vote for Democrat or Republican, you are throwing away your vote. If you keep voting for Democrats and Republicans, you find that more and more they're the ones who are causing the problems, and then blame it on the other party. Voting Green is your only real choice.
And how can they find your website?
My website is www.ohioforlambert4.com.
One more time?
ohio4lambert.com.
All right. Thanks, Dennis Lambert, congressional candidate for the Green Party, 6th Congressional District.
Thank you, Bob.